you have to know what people want and you have to give it to them in a way that makes them realize that like they can't live without it.
I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden, and I'm so thrilled to be here today for the Kara Golden Show with my next guests. We have Erica Huss and Zoe Sakotis here, and they are both the co-founders of one of my favorite brands from a little while ago. So some of you may not be familiar with it, but there's many of us out there that looked at them as kind of this cultish, super cool, disruptive innovator brand. I'll just share what it is, Blueprint. And you may know it also as the Blueprint Cleanse and some of those other things that people talked about it as. And today they are founding their second company called Earth and Star, which we're going to get into that as well. As you know, we talk to founders, entrepreneurs, and CEOs and really get kind of the journey, the down and dirty, lots of fun stuff that they've learned along the way. So thrilled to have them. And like I said, this is their second entrepreneurial venture that they've done together. And their new company is also about health, wellness, and functional mushrooms. So if I piqued anyone's interest there, then you definitely need to listen more as we talk a little bit more to Erica and Zoe and really hear much more about them. They also have a great podcast that is called Highway to Well, which if you haven't listened to that, also definitely give a listen to that. And like I said, they're pioneers in the wellness space. Super, super cool ladies, and I'm thrilled to have you guys here. So welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What an introduction.
I know, right? So whoever wants to go first, tell me a little bit about how, you know, who were Zoe and Erica as little kids?
Okay. Well, as kids, yeah, we didn't know each other. I know you can't tell by our youthful appearances. Childhood seems like it was so recent, but... I will speak for myself. I don't know if I was necessarily a born entrepreneur. We had this conversation recently, whether you're born or made. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm sort of the hybrid of the two. I came by it honestly. Both of my parents worked for themselves in New York. I grew up in, you know, the 80s in New York City, and my parents worked in advertising. They both had their own businesses. So I guess to that end, I did kind of have it predestined that I was going to end up running my own thing. I started out working in, my early professional career was in theater and show business, and I did some behind the scenes stuff and worked a lot in production, which ended up, I think, actually really coming in handy when it becomes about building your own company, because mm-hmm. all it is production, taking elements and different pieces of all of these kind of different categories and areas and putting them all together to create the show. So I went from there into really headfirst into hospitality. Zoe and I actually met in a bar, working in a bar.
I love it.
Slinging a different kind of beverage, I guess you would say, back in those days in New York in the year 2000 at the Hudson Hotel. At that point, you know, I was really interested in the hospitality business. And, so I kind of dove into that and wanted to learn all the different elements of it, you know, between service and management and PR and the kind of more, you know, the bigger world around it. And, so I kind of carved my path, and I felt like, you know, I worked in some office settings for a while and really realized that, I don't necessarily have a problem with authority, but I definitely prefer to set my own pace and answer to myself, or in this case, to a friend who I, you know, genuinely treasure and respect, and whose opinion and vision is very aligned with mine. I will stop there because I know that was just a quick question.
No, I love it. I love it. Zoe?
Okay. As a child, let's see. I did not grow up in the city, sadly, but I would have loved to. I grew up in Pennsylvania, northeastern PA, definitely the sticks. Did not have a lot of money growing up. I was the youngest of four kids, like single mother, worked two jobs, put herself through school. Definitely like a very scrappy upbringing. And yeah, I mean, I definitely grew up with this kind of mentality that is, you know, if you want something, you have to earn it. Like there was never anything given to me. I never had like, you know, an allowance for school. I mean, like really basic things. Like I had to have a job. Like I think I've been working as long as I can remember. So actually my first business was when I was 13. And the really nice optometrist in my town gave me, she ran a kennel. It was very weird. I mean, this is like northeastern PA, like some weird people. But she had an optometry center, which all of my siblings went to because they needed glasses. And I was the only one who didn't. So I'd always be in the waiting room, like the shy kid. And she had this like random dog kennel in the backyard. She also showed dogs. And so she said like, hey, I'll give you a dog if you learn how to show it and groom them and all the rest. So she gave me the basement to the optometry center. And she let me set up shop and start my own like grooming company. So it was kind of an amazing, like first brush with like, I set my own hours. I like organize my clients. I like lock up and lock out, you know, like it was kind of like an amazing experience to have, that sort of autonomy at such a young age and be like, oh, I just made $40 an hour. This is pretty awesome. So yeah, I mean, I think my childhood was very scrappy is probably a good word. And then I just sort of inched my way closer to the city, went to high school in New Jersey, went to college in New York City. So I've been in the city now longer since I was like 17.
Amazing. And so you mentioned, actually Erica mentioned the Hudson. So you guys are working at the Hudson.
Oh yeah.
And were you just dreaming of like, you know, starting your own company together from day one? Or what was the moment that you guys said, oh my gosh, we should go do this?
Well, I was very much in, I was not, I did not move up the hospitality rungs to manager level because I have no place in any kind of corporation. I was, as Erica did, but I was very much interested at that point in the sort of raw food space, this idea of healing yourself with food and nutrition in general, which was introduced by, at the time, a very hippie boyfriend from California. So I kind of went down that rabbit hole. I was, you know, graduating school. Again, I was studying like production, communication, stuff like that. But I really made a sharp turn once I discovered this world. And it was like head first, kind of like once you know these things, you can never unknow them. And so I was really, you know, starting to study and take it pretty seriously on my own while working at the Hudson. And, you know, I went from like carnivore like to raw foodist overnight and got a lot of weird looks and spent a lot of time eating lunch by myself in like the one raw food restaurant at the time in Manhattan. And so Erica was at that time, I think, you know, probably more interested in PR. I mean, what would you say like that moment was where we kind of went different ways?
Well, I think it was, yeah. I mean, I sort of moved away from actually working in the bar setting to moving into working in a PR firm to work with chefs and restaurants and hospitality clients, just to kind of learn all the sides of the industry. So I was getting a little bit more of like a corporate, you know, polished training, I suppose. And Zoe and I were still, you know, very friendly and hung out together a lot. And when she started telling me about this, you know, this project that she was working on. And she had the framework of this, like, I mean, literally the blueprint of what this concept was, with, you know, the initial product concept and some test clients that were available. And, you know, she had kind of been getting feedback and seeing that this thing really had legs. It was this moment of, you know, needing to take it to the next level. And the first thing I need is this, this, and this, and then I need this. And I think I need a press release. And I think you know what a press release is. And I was like, I do know what a press release is. And so, you know, I think it was maybe 6-8 months into where she had come with it, that it looked like, okay, this is actually something that really does have the potential to go. And I was certainly not, you know, tethered by any means to sitting at a desk in an office full of 55 other women. So it was like, all right, this doesn't feel like a risk. This feels like the thing that just makes sense for me to do. And certainly for Zoe, it didn't feel like a risk. It was like, this was her calling. So it was kind of just like, well, you know stuff that I don't, and I know stuff that you don't, and this totally makes sense. So let's just do it and see what happens.
I love the yin and yang, right? That you guys just really naturally and organically got to. I think that part of, you know, the problem, I've met many founders over the years. And I think, as you know, Erica, that my husband is actually my yin or yang, however you want to look at it. He's our chief operating officer. And it was very clear early on that we both like appreciated each other's kind of skill sets on, you know, on the business side of things. And it was, I feel like, you know, the two of you knew that as well. You didn't sit there and figure out who's going to really do what. It just came very naturally, which I think is a great sign. And frankly, when I see two founders get together, maybe they met at business school and they're like, oh, we have this great idea and we're going to do it. And so often they're so much alike, right? And that's where the problem starts, where, you know, it's especially, you know, if you even have an ounce of competition in you, you don't intend for it to go in that direction, but it just seems to for some other reason. So I love hearing that. So you founded Blueprint back in 2007. And how did you manage to build this business? I mean, were you guys ever talking about stores, or was it really kind of servicing clients? Was that kind of the initial blueprint, I guess?
Yeah, the original blueprint. I think, you know, it was definitely an interesting time because it was, I mean, obviously social media was not, certainly not what it is today, but then also the brick and mortar kind of ruled and there was no real direct-to-consumer channel. I mean, it just didn't really, this is before Amazon really. I mean, this is kind of, it's kind of amazing to look back and see how insanely it's changed in such a short time. So at the time, you know, we were not used to getting packages delivered like we are today. We weren't used to getting things like really at our doorstep, just, you know, from like juice to perishables to whatever it is. So anyway, at the time, the structure was really, it was meant to be, so it was born out of like an actual hub and spoke kind of idea, right? So we had this production commissary kind of juice bar to start. And we had a group of women that we were lucky to test it on. And so it started very locally. We were literally making the product in a test kitchen. I guess we'll call it a test kitchen. We really like elbowed our way into some very generous people's kitchens. Anyway, they were kind enough to give us like a corner in the back. We eventually like took over the whole kitchen, but we built up our clientele very organically. It was like a local group of women in Darien, Connecticut, who were kind of like super early adopters. They were like binging on cleanses every week. They loved it. They couldn't stop talking about it. I mean, that was the beauty of this product, was that it was so experiential. I mean, you were essentially going on a cleanse for an extended amount of time between like 1 and 5 days. So of course you feel like a superior human and you want to share that with like everyone around you. So it grew very quickly, but basically we would make it. It was made to order. It was paid for before we made it, which is a really nice model. And so we would then pack it up, deliver it in the beginning. I mean, we were literally delivering it ourselves in like zip cars, if anyone can remember what those are. But yeah, I mean, from there, it sort of grew to be delivered to your door in Manhattan and then eventually delivered nationwide. And so the direct-to-consumer piece of it was really nice. It gave us a lot of feedback. Consumers were willing to pay a premium because it seemed so special, you know, then. But to have something like that delivered to you. We got a lot of feedback. And then eventually, you know, the biggest problem with what we were doing at the time was that it was a perishable product. So we couldn't necessarily put raw juice on a shelf. It was literally is not legal unless you're, you know, you're making it yourself. So we, you know, we had to figure out a way once Whole Foods literally came knocking, we had to figure out a way how to treat the juice without compromising the integrity of the product by heating it, because it's first and foremost a raw juice. And that was all around nutritional integrity. So we were also the first people to crack the HPP code, which is how you treat this type of product without heating it. So we basically stands for high pressure pasteurization or processing. But basically, you know, we pressurized the juice and that allowed us to enter retail. And so, you know, once that happened a couple of years later, it was just explosive growth. But that model, I mean, you know, we were doing quite well direct to consumer, but eventually the retail just completely eclipsed it, which is very exciting. Yeah.
So interesting. Well, for those of you who maybe weren't around during that time, I mean, I remember I was in e-commerce early at America Online, and, you know, I built out the America Online's kind of shopping mall in the very early days. And so I understand like the picking and packing and perishable. And I always pointed to Omaha Steaks as being, you know, the boldest person in the world, like to actually put the stuff in a box and send it out. And when I saw you guys doing it, it was, I really huge kudos, admiration for you. And as I mentioned to Eric, I was a huge fan, customer, never had a bad bottle. I mean, I was like always telling people, you know, I kept thinking one of these times it's going to stay out too long and it's going to be a mess. And, you know, I'm in the food industry, so I get it. And, but it wasn't, it was like always terrific. So I really think that you guys did an amazing, amazing job. So then you sold the company, successfully sold it. Do you want to talk a little bit about what year was that that you sold it?
2012.
In 2012?
So, yeah, end of 2012. So it was year five of the business.
And who did you sell it to?
To Hain Celestial.
Got it. And then did you guys both stay on at that point or for a little while? You guys both
did. We did. Okay.
Yeah, awesome. We stayed on. Well, we for most of our contracts, we left a little bit early.
Yeah, which was out of our, you know, always leave before the party's over.
Yeah. For a couple of years or
we were there for like a year and a half. I think we're supposed to be there for about two, but we stayed. Yeah. It was a very interesting corporate experience that I think neither one of us was too interested in continuing. We went right, you know, we never took out any took on outside investment. We literally bootstrapped the whole thing. And so we just went right to acquisition. So yeah, that was, I didn't realize at the time how lucky we were to be able to have done that. Until now, I understand the pains of having to raise money.
Yeah, I think lucky, but I also think, you know, it was hard earned, you know, like that was.
Totally. Not to take away from any hard work.
No, I know, but we put ourselves in that position. Yeah. I think we never realized really how unique it was until now when we're raising money for our business and people are learning that we never took on outside capital for Blueprint. And they're like, really? You guys did that? And we're like, yeah, we did. And I think it's actually good that we didn't realize it at the time, because I think it might have altered our attitude a little bit.
Well, I love just the hustle of you guys doing it and the scrappiness of just, you know, the model, the upfront money, and then you shipped it. And like the whole model of it was just you guys should be really proud. And it is really fun, I think is the best word to say, like to look back and actually see kind of what you accomplished. Yeah. And it's, I think everybody should do that, whether you're a founder or whether, you know, you're you're thinking about being a founder, looking back on some of those challenging times. And I even saw Zoe laughing a little bit about taking a little space in the kitchen. I'm sure there's a lot more backstory to that. Like, we have those as well. Part of the reason I decided to write my book was, you know, I wanted to really share some of, like, you know, not only the funny stories, but the warts and all along the way, that it's just, you couldn't make some of the stuff up. Then yeah, I think totally. That if you haven't done it before, you just can't even imagine that that's how this stuff goes down. It's so interesting. So now your new venture, you two got back together. Now, were you ever apart, or were you guys still hanging out and chatting?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, we took a little bit of time in between Blueprint and figuring out our next move to kind of, you know, take a small victory lap. And awesome. Zoe made some humans and I did some traveling and got married. And I think, you know, we were a little bit conflicted as to, like, do we just sort of sit back and, you know, just figure something out eventually, or do we stay focused and stay at least with one foot in the door? Because we felt like, you know, there is a window of opportunity and of relevance for you and your name and your brand, and we didn't want to see that window close. So I think we found the right balance of how to kind of spend the time. We did a little bit of some small projects on our own, you know, some investments and things like that. And then, you know, we decided to start the podcast partly because, to your point, Kara, what you were saying earlier about why you wanted to start yours, we were just having conversations and feeling like, you know, the wellness landscape had changed so dramatically, even in the few years since we had started Blueprint until that time, that we felt like, okay, well, our voice at the table is actually super, you know, meaningful because we've been here since the beginning. And I think what was also a bit unusual, because we started about 3 years ago as well, was there were a lot of podcasts about, you know, starting a business and, you know, the how I built this kind of thing. And there were a lot of podcasts about wellness in, like, the sort of Goop camp, but this was even before Goop, but very few hosted by founders of those types of businesses. Mm-hmm. It was either kind of one or the other, and even fewer hosted by women. So we were kind of like, all right, well, there's not a whole lot of voices in this female wellness founder, you know, circle that we're in. So let's just kind of keep the conversation going. And, you know, we were able to really make some great relationships and foster some great, you know, relationships and contacts that some of them carried over from Blueprint days and some of them are relevant to us now. But yeah, we kind of felt like, in the same way that we wanted to take, you know, the concept of juicing and bring it to a mass audience in a way that felt approachable, that's what we wanted to do with just information about the wellness world and bring it in a way that felt not super preachy, because that does tend to happen, and felt like we could actually really help people who maybe think, oh, I'm not really into wellness, I'm not a health person. But first of all, you know, on some level at this point, everybody is, whether you know it or not. And secondly, like, you don't have to be the sort of, you know, live the cleanest life and your body is your temple 150% of the time and every move that you make is with wellness and mind. Like, that's not what it's about for us. And we wanted to make sure people understood that, like, and feel like you, it can still feel inclusive. So
yeah, no, I love it.
Sort of.
So your new venture is Earth and Star. And you said at some point that the future is fungi. How do you actually pronounce? Is it fungi? Or
you could say fungi or fungi.
Fungi. Okay. Yeah. Third way to say that. So yeah. What, how did,
well, fungi is the Italian. So actually you were right.
Okay. So, or mushrooms. And so how did you guys get interested in this?
Well, I mean, I think it's safe to say that there's no shortage of supplements, superfoods, powders, potions in both of our cupboards. And I think we're always kind of keeping an ear to the ground and, you know, seeing what's out there, seeing what's new, seeing what works, and then trying it for ourselves. And this was just one area where we were both kind of struck a couple of years ago, just casually talking about it in passing. And, you know, we had been consuming functional mushrooms for however long and noting the difference that it made, you know, overall to each other. And we were using it for different reasons, but, I was like, oh my God, I stopped taking it for like, a few weeks or whatever. And I really feel the difference. And we're just, you know, there's so much efficacy there and there's so much science in this space, and it's sort of undiscovered. And it kind of blew our minds at something this powerful, like an entire kingdom that kind of has yet to be discovered by the Western world, can have such a huge impact on your health.
And what's the most surprising thing about mushrooms that most consumers don't know?
So, I mean, well, there are a lot of things that they don't know, but I feel like, you know, the benefits, as soon as you start to rattle them off, it sounds like they're literally magic. It's insane. I mean, I would say the common denominator, functional mushrooms, which by the way, functional mushrooms for the most part fall under the umbrella of adaptogens, which maybe people are a little bit more familiar with right now. But, you know, first and foremost, they are all immunomodulators, which means that they're basically constantly working to either increase or rev up your immune system or calm it down if it needs to calm down. They're constantly trying to balance and support your immune system, which could not be more critical right now on a global scale. So, but beyond that, they have individual sort of superpowers and properties, you know, depending on the mushroom. Everything from increased energy, calm, relaxation, you know, there's beauty benefits. It's literally endless. But, you know, we took a look around and the landscape was a little kind of scarce. There was really not much out there. There are a handful of brands. Basically, everything existed in a pill or powder format or like an instant coffee. It did not taste particularly good. I think the wellness community is very willing to choke things down if they know that there's a promise and you know, whatever the benefits are. But, you know, we just thought like, okay, we don't need to sacrifice taste or convenience to consume this type of thing. And in that way, it's very similar to Blueprint, in that we just saw this sort of kingdom. Blueprint was a plant kingdom. Now it's the fungi kingdom. And said, like, how do we take this super fringe concept and bring it to the masses in a way that's delicious and convenient and, you know, consumer friendly, so that it's not dogmatic, it's not preachy, it's not overly sciencey, which a lot of these areas tend to get. So knowing what we know, which is beverage, we decided, like, why don't we take this, you know, change the format, put it in a ready to drink format, make it super delicious with this very clean label, maybe the squeakiest out there. And, you know, and present it in a way that's like sexy and not like nerds in the woods, you know, like something that is a little bit more mass, in the same way that we did with Blueprint, which was, you know, you don't have to be like a hippie in the juice bar with like, whatever, your gray braid, we used to say, and like your Birkenstocks, which have all kind of like come back in fashion. But yeah, so I mean, that was sort of, it's all come full circle, but that was the idea. So, I mean, we've been at work on this project for about 2 years, just on like the R&D piece.
Just so everybody's cleared. So the actual format is in a coffee, nice little can, but
it's total coincidence. My afternoon little chocolate. So this is the cacao flavor. So everything is plant-based. It's all oat milk. And we have a blend of four of what we think are maybe the most powerful and relevant mushrooms in terms of their benefits to like a daily routine. So we took a blend of four mushrooms, which is lion's mane, reishi, cordyceps, and chaga. And, you know, and then we've created a line. We're starting with four SKUs. So we've got cacao, matcha, turmeric, and we have a cold brew black coffee. And everything has the same blend of, a whopping 2000 milligrams of functional mushroom extracts, which is truly a therapeutic dose. Do I sound like an infomercial yet?
A little bit.
So we wanted to find, I mean, the idea is basically like, take the habitual products that people are already consuming every day, like your coffee, your latte, and just enhance it with functional mushrooms. Like, don't ask people to change their habits, to like incorporate yet another beverage into their daily routine. I mean, the beverage aisle is like daunting these days. So many options. But like, we all know that, you know, our habits are coffee and lattes, things like that. So that's what we're focused on.
But then beyond that, also the idea is really to roll it out into a larger platform. We started with beverage because that's the world that we come from. We have a dark chocolate bar. We have more dark chocolate bars coming out. And again, to Zoe's point, it's just about finding those moments in your day, your habits. So if you're not, you know, looking for another cold beverage in, you know, to work into your rotation, then we have something different for you. Because the whole point is, however you're going to consume functional mushrooms, or however you're going to consume, you know, your habitual things, whether mm-hmm. it's your afternoon, you know, sweet fix with a little bit of dark chocolate, or, you know, ground coffee, or whatever it is, we want to be there to kind of elevate what you're already doing.
I love it. So you mentioned this actually, the fundraising and how people are doing. Are you fundraising on this time as compared to last time you didn't fundraise? What was sort of the idea behind that? I mean, fundraising early versus financing it on your own.
It's just a totally different model. And make no mistake, we are also financing it on our own. We joke that we have accidentally self-funded our seed round because it did take quite a bit to get things going. The R&D was not an inexpensive process for a product in a category like this. There's no way around that. So it's a different model. Blueprint and the juice world in general, I mean, literally anybody could basically start a juice company from their kitchen and kind of scale it and see how it goes. But then you find out very quickly who actually has what it takes and who doesn't. But something like this that does really require some major, you know, food science in order to find the right formula that actually is palatable and delicious, not just palatable, but actually delicious, was not easy. We've felt for a long time that this is a category that is still a bit untapped and it is on the eve of just explosive growth. Mm-hmm. So we feel like we're not interested in mom and popping this thing. We definitely want to create, see some major velocity as early as possible because we want to stay at the kind of the forefront. Sure. Of what is about to happen. And that requires some serious capital. So yeah, it's hilarious that this is like, you know, year, whatever it is, 16 of us working together, 13, 14, I can't do the math. And this is like our real first, you know, first real go at fundraising.
I love it. So what do you feel is like the biggest learnings that you have taken from, you know, being together for this long in terms of just building a business? I mean, what would you do differently this time on second go around? Obviously, it's a different category, but I always tell people that, you know, I don't think you could launch, I'll pick on Red Bull. I pick on a lot of different beverages, but I don't think you could launch Red Bull today because no one ever thought that Red Bull tasted great, right? They did it because it was, you know, functional, right? I mean, a different type of functional, but it was functional.
Yep.
And people got addicted to it because it had that, you know, boost and it had yeah. that sweet, but it wouldn't be able to make it today. Like, I think you really have to have a great tasting thing, even if you have cricket chips or, you know, whatever it is, it has to taste good. If it doesn't taste good, it doesn't matter, you know,
correct,
how functional it is. And, you know, your products obviously taste good. You guys know that, but what else do you think you've learned along the way?
Oh, God. Well, hold on that statement, if it doesn't taste good. And, you know, I'm pretty much a firm believer in if it doesn't taste good, it's not going to obviously work. You have to have flavor. But there are certainly a lot of, you're talking about Red Bull, but I can say today, there are quite a few functional brands out there that are, can I pick on a brand? Is that allowed here?
Sure.
Not really picking on them, but it's really a question mark in my mind as we grow, which is, you know, you have a brand like Super Coffee, which is like the keto brand that is, you know, coffee, very, very chemical label, a lot of like not great ingredients, but it's functional because it has like MCT oil, et cetera. But like the flavor is so really not good. And, you know, I've been truly amazed at how they've grown. I mean,
but does it have a lot of sugar in it?
No, but it has like sugar alcohol, you know, so it's not like a, I mean, that's their whole, they're sort of like a bunch of like sort of workout brothers and like, but
yeah,
they have very specific guidance. Anyway, but I guess to this point, it's just, it's confusing to me sometimes which brands actually make it because they don't actually taste that good. But learnings, going back
well,
to the question.
Well, I would say a learning there is even taking the Super Coffee example, like they have capitalized on a movement, which, you know, the keto movement, it started with a very kind of different, you know, idea around how to get your body to a certain place for optimal performance. And you can definitely take shortcuts, which are adding all sorts of weird sugar alcohols and flavors and things like that to create a, like a super sweet palate with no sugar. So I would say, you know, what they've done is kind of a learning for us as well, which is like, you have to know what people want mm-hmm. and you have to give it to them in a way that makes them realize that like they can't live without it. And I think that, you know, but I think also to that point for us, it's really, you have to go where your people are, at least to start, mm-hmm. because that's where you really create the evangelists. And once you find the people who are already kind of excited and really genuinely, authentically committed to what you're doing, it feels very easy. It feels much more like a, you know, that there's a pull rather than a push. You cannot be everything to everybody. I mean, that's something that, you know, I don't think that I'm not the first person to say that, you know, in the last 10 minutes, let alone about business. But yeah, I think you have to be respectful of your audience and listen so that you can understand how to create something for them. And you know, there is the sort of Steve Jobs attitude of like, just tell the people what they want. But I don't know that applies especially when you're talking about like something that you consume.
Yeah. And frankly, I mean, first movers are not necessarily the ones that win, right? It's really, you know, as this category to your earlier point expands, it's really, I think taste wins with this consumer. And as you start to, you know, expand beyond even, you know, the keto and some of those groups, definitely, I think that taste becomes really, really important and feeling and et cetera is definitely there. But I think taste is super, super important. And I think so often people are really, frankly, hiding behind sugar, no matter what it's called, whether it's diet sweeteners or, you know, whatever. And it's pretty easy to create a product that has, you know, tastes good with a lot of that in it, you know, but I think it's much harder if you're not doing that.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to take shortcuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I would just add that a lot of the learning, it for me, just personally, is that this idea that you can't, you know, you come up with an idea, you know, it's going to evolve, and you can't sort of hold too tightly to any one sort of first version of that idea. Like, it's going to evolve. I think you have to allow it to sort of get to where it needs to be, and it will eventually be molded into something by, you know, the input that you're getting from consumers. Basically everyone around you. So it's not just like, come up with an idea, that's it, now go. It's like, we might find, you know, with our new product line extensions that are coming out beyond lattes or ready to drink format, like we might find that the chocolate bar line is actually what people are responding to. Like, we just don't know. So I feel like it's like, you have to just let things evolve and be very willing to pivot and be very fluid.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So this is amazing, you guys. I'm so excited to get everybody to try this product. Where do people go to find Earth and Star products?
They can go to our website to order it, which is earthandstar.com. We're on social at Earth and Star Co. But then also on our website, you have a store locator, which shows all of the retail locations that we're in. We're in about 150 locations across the country right now, primarily in New York and LA, but quite a few in Chicago and Texas. So yeah, there's lots of different ways to get your mushrooms.
I love it. So Zoe and Erica, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your journey and your story. And I love second acts and I'm super, super excited to see what you guys do and how you grow and scale the business. And thanks everyone for listening. This is the Kara Golden Show. We're here every Monday and Wednesday, and check us out and give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify or your favorite platform. And also, if you haven't already, pick up a copy of my book, Undaunted, and definitely give me a shout and say hello and let me know what you think. So thanks, everyone. Before we sign off, I want to talk to you about fear. People like to talk about fearless leaders, but achieving big goals isn't about fearlessness. Successful leaders recognize their fears and decide to deal with them head on in order to move forward. This is where my new book, Undaunted, comes in. This book is designed for anyone who wants to succeed in the face of fear, overcome doubts, and live a little undaunted. Order your copy today at undauntedthebook.com and learn how to look your doubts and doubters in the eye and achieve your dreams. For a limited time, you'll also receive a free case of Hint Water. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Send me a tweet at Kara Golden and let me know. And if you like what you heard, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Thanks for listening.